Sup, thrill seekers. I'm Connor.
And I'm Dev, and you're listening to Mass Hysteria.
Post-tonsil edition.
Surgery edition. I still have tonsils. I guess you don't.
That's true. I sound a little froggy, but hopefully I breathe less asthmatically.
A refined frog. Let us know. Ribbit. Welcome back, thrill seekers. Dev Dog here will be narrating this episode
as
our tiny frog recovers. I do have a mass hysterical. If you're new here, if this is the first episode you're listening to, welcome. And also, we do this little segment called A Mass Hysterical because we want to give our attention and respect to the case, but we also hang out with each other every week, and we do like to catch up, so we try to share a little lighthearted, funny tidbit from the week before.
If you hear that,
it's the dog. Connor brought the dog up. Now we have this, like, hypersensitive mic, and so it's going to pick up on his
rhinoceros noises.
He'll probably pass gas during this episode. You'll see. Let us know what you find. But it's not actually the mass hysterical. If you want to skip over this part, no hard feelings. Sometimes we skip over them because we're also annoyed. But if you need a little bit of something light in your week, let us know if you think these are funny. If not, keep your opinion to yourself. Just kidding.
Maybe send in an email.
Send in an email, themasshysteriapodcast@gmail.com. So Connor knows where I live. I live in a basement unit. A subterranean level. And it's honestly because I'm a cheapskate. It's affordable. Yeah.
So it's a nice apartment, actually.
It is nice, but it's in the basement. And I have the really tiny room, which is no hard feelings. I chose the tiny room. But the my side of the room touches the driveway of the building, and I have an AC unit in now, especially because it's
in, like, the tiny little window.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now this time of year, everyone's like touring the buildings and new people are moving in, et cetera, et cetera. And so I can, like, you know, you can tell if it's like a mom and a dad and a kid,
mm-hmm.
especially they're most likely their first time moving out, whatever.
Right.
So the mom's like, oh my God, honey, like there's a courtyard, like and the building is really pretty. And then she walks by my window and she sees the AC and she goes, oh my God, someone lives down there? And I had to resist every temptation to not scream back, and I can't get out.
Oh my God.
But, like, how humiliating is that? I'm, like, on a call and I hear, someone lives down there? Like, I'm a little hobbit.
But there's
in a
also,
hole.
Like, an apartment door, like, so right next, like, to your windows.
She's like, sorry, our kids are top floor kids only. Have fun. Heat rises. It's hot in Boston. But yeah, I was like, wow, this is humbling. But still, you know, my rent, I have a good rent deal, so she can say what she wants. But I definitely chuckled and was certainly humbled that day. So if you live in hopefully you live in an AC apartment if you're in the heated time in New England. But if you live in a basement unit, let us know. We can bond over that.
They're a little cooler usually.
They are. It's so much cooler. We don't have to run the AC in the apartment usually. So today we are going to cover a case that's in the news currently, retroactively. After I did all of the research, I realized some podcasts have recently covered it because it's, like, currently ongoing. So not trying to copy anyone that already did anything. If we have find the specific podcasts that have recently published it, we can link it below. But I did see it come up because it's ongoing right now.
Right.
So we'll just kick it off. Yeah, so in 2016, Nathan Carman, spelled like Carman, he was 22 years old. And when you think of a 22-year-old, you maybe think of a fresh college graduate, someone early in their chosen career, the Taylor Swift song, whatever. When I was 22, I saved up every penny to travel, tried to figure out how to budget for rent, fought off the desire every day to buy two kittens. lost that fight eventually. But no matter what our paths are in life, for most, granted, I won't speak for the Justin Biebers of the world, but for most of us, we're figuring out, you know, how to make a living while also building our life, right? So on September 17th of 2016, Nathan went on a fishing trip with his mother, Linda. The boat, which was affectionately named the Chicken Pox, was ready to go for like a fall break cruise in Martha's Vineyard. This wasn't a small paddle boat. It wasn't your, you know, your uncle's boat with like a tiny rudder.
It's like a nice.
It was a 31-foot yacht.
Nice.
Well equipped for a 12-hour trip. He and his mom, from what I found, would regularly go on these fishing trips. They had some tension as he got older, but they would bond on these trips, and it was something they enjoyed doing together. So because they were experienced with these fishing trips, they would leave at night sometimes and like take advantage of times where there's like lower traffic and
more fish,
where it's less hot probably too. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, I guess September is a little bit cooler, but in this trip specifically, they left at 11 p.m. and they were, you know, going to be home in 12 hours, definitely by noon the next day. I know nothing, absolutely nothing, about boats. So I reviewed this document called Parts of a Boat. It's like a, you know, like a Connors into Equines, you know, when they have like the maps of the horse.
Yeah,
like,
all the parts.
Here's the withers. Labeled, here's the hoof. Yeah, it was literally that, but for a boat. And you have to, I believe, fill it in to pass the boater exam, which I'm honestly not sure what that means if you pass. I'm assuming you get access to a boating license. But at the risk of sounding increasingly ignorant, I will silence myself and instead provide some boating terms, and you can guess what they mean. And if I mess them up, and you are a frequent boater, you have every right to correct me. Just please be kind, because I literally don't even know the last time I've been on a boat. So there's the side lights, which are the little like red and green lights at the front of the boat. There's the gunwale. Do you know what that is?
Mm-mm.
You're not going to even try?
I have no idea.
For a little Tootsie Roll? It's the upper edge.
You don't actually have Tootsie Rolls, so why would I try? There's no incentive.
I don't reveal my prizes before you've won the reward. The gunwale is like the upper edge of a boat's side.
Okay.
The cleat.
Okay.
It's a metal fitting where you can tie the rope, so like where
people dock the boats, right? Yeah.
The hull. Do you know this?
Yeah, that's the front of the boat.
The body of the boat.
Yeah.
I didn't know either. And then there's the transom, which is the cross section of the stern, the back of the boat, like where the motor would be, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's many more parts of a boat. I won't bore everyone with my very interesting lesson, but one more I want to mention is called the trim tabs. So boats can have trim tabs under the stern, which like helps redirect the water flow and propel the boat upward, you know, giving it the momentum to go forward, right? Okay. So if I butchered that explanation, again, please forgive me. A can of AC refrigerant exploded on me 2 weeks ago, so my understanding of mechanics needs some fine-tuning. But in September of 2016, Nathan, he goes out on this trip with his mom. It was supposed to be very low-key, you know, enjoying the tail end of summer, right? They have this beautiful boat. It's the late summer, early fall. It should have been the perfect night into the early morning for a mother and a son. 8 days later, Nathan was found 8 days later.
So they never came back.
This was supposed to be a 12-hour trip. Mm-hmm. Yeah, never came back. 8 days later, Nathan was found alone over 100 miles off the coast of Martha's Vineyard. God. He was rescued by a raft, and his mother was nowhere in sight. When he was rescued, he claimed that the boat had holes in it and it had sunk, and he believed his mother was deceased. She sank when the boat did, and he wasn't able to save her. The boat's insurer and the business that sold Nathan the policy refused to pay for the boat. So he tries to, you know, file a claim. This boat sunk.
Right.
His mother disappeared, etc.
Now, why won't they pay for the boat?
Well, that's a great question. They claim that it sunk on purpose. So a witness said...
So did they find the boat? This is after they found the boat, recovered it?
No, the boat was not recovered.
Oh, okay.
Just sunk in the middle of the ocean.
How do we know if it was sunk on purpose?
Well, wow. I didn't even plan these, but he's asking these questions that are perfectly leading us in the right direction. So a witness claimed that Nathan, a few hours before the boat's departure, used an electric power drill to enlarge holes in the transom. So he removed the trim tabs, like I talked about, that would propel the boat. didn't properly reseal them, and it created this opening in the transom, which then brought water into the boat, right? So they accused Nathan of lying about his repair work and then not being truthful about where the boat actually sank. The insurance claim that Nathan filed was for $85,000. Were the holes noticeable? I don't know if they would be noticeable, but they're like, you know, because you're probably wondering, okay, his mom is an experienced boater. Like, would she notice them when they got on? Well, he did put the trim tabs back on, but he didn't fully seal them properly, and he enlarged them to the size of, you know, like a half dollar, like an inch radius. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that would have stuck out.
It's not going to gush water, too.
Yeah, he didn't put like, a 2 foot hole.
It's going to take a little while.
Exactly. So why would he have put himself in that kind of danger? Compromising his boat, right? Risking his life, risking his mother's. Well, his aunts, his three maternal aunts, believe that it's not a coincidence, and they sued him to keep him from collecting his mother's inheritance. Inheritance that totaled $28 million.
Wow.
Okay, so his aunts filed a petition accusing him of two things. We'll talk about the first thing in a second, but the second was killing his mother in a ploy to, you know, collect this inheritance. Money, yeah. And the challenge here is that she's not legally dead yet, right?
Okay.
So, now, if this was a boating accident or a tragedy due to innocent mistakes, that would be one thing. But when Nathan's mother's body was never found, it only added to the list of very strange events in his life. So I said we're going to talk about two things. The second being is him plotting to intentionally kill his mother to get the inheritance. So what was the first thing? Okay, so in December of 2013, this was a little less than three years earlier. Now, Nathan's the same age that we are, basically, so he would have been 18 at this time. And he was just starting his life as an adult. And while this was happening, a man, so December 2013, near Christmas time, a man was found dead from a gunshot wound to the head in Windsor, Connecticut. John Chalakos was 87 years old and well-known as a nursing home developer. He made quite the name for himself, and he had quite the fortune over the years. These are like 90-bed facilities. It's not like, you know, two families living here. Yeah. His facilities were all over Massachusetts and Connecticut, and according to those who knew him, he would name his luxurious facilities after his family members, which I thought was very sweet. He was a father, he was also a grandfather, and one of his grandchildren was Nathan Carman.
Mm.
So on the morning of December 20th, just before 8:30 in the morning, his body was discovered by a family member. His case, to the day, remains officially unsolved.
Okay.
As there were no witnesses.
Suspish.
And no gun or weapon found at the scene. While there is no conviction yet, police did immediately notice that there was a glaring red flag at the crime scene. It did not appear that anybody had broken in. We've talked about this before. There's no evidence of
often
a fight.
It's someone you know.
Or a intruder. Yeah, it's usually someone you knew. At least someone that knew John. So initially, Linda was actually considered a potential person of interest in the murder of her father.
That makes sense.
Her attorney told the Boston Herald, after she was lost at sea, that she had been charged with assaulting her father over an argument regarding money. He later dropped the charges, but because of this incident...
And is that where her money came from?
Yeah, her father. Yeah. Because of this incident, she was considered a person of interest. She was eventually cleared as a person of interest, but they did look into her initially.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, they looked at family, so that tracks.
Yeah, especially when they realized that it didn't look like there was an intruder.
Mm-hmm.
She claimed that she and Nathan could not be responsible for the murder because they were fishing together in Rhode Island. Later, though, she did tell police, rather confessed, that Nathan was supposed to meet her in the middle of the night, like 3, 4 a.m., the night that the murder happened, to drive to Rhode Island, and he never showed up. So on November 11th, 2013, Nathan was 18, he bought a gun at Shooter's Outpost in New Hampshire. He was renting an apartment in Bloomfield, and he used that ID to buy a gun in New Hampshire. It's easier to buy a gun in New Hampshire. So this was a little over a month from when his grandfather was found shot dead. Grandfather found December 20th. This is November 11th. according to the gun dealer, they interviewed him, he tried to convince Nathan, like, oh, you know, if you're interested in target shooting, you should be going for, like, a more economical brand, mm-hmm. you know, get, like, a little air pistol or something, yeah, you know, maybe not that, but, like, yeah. you don't need a big weapon. And the Boston Globe had that a quote from Nathan, or excuse me, from the gun dealer that said, Nathan chillingly said to the gun dealer, I've done my research and this is what I want.
Oh my God.
And it was a Sig Sauer 716 patrol rifle. Okay, this is a like $2,500 gun.
Wow.
And because of how, I guess not the word strong, but like powerful, the weapon, like it has a specific type of bullet, right? Mm-hmm. So like now he has this gun and the bullet found matched. At the crime scene with his grandfather matched what would have gone in this gun. Mm-hmm. So Nathan was the last known person to see his grandfather alive. He went out to dinner with him on December 19th.
Okay.
The grandfather was found December 20th morning. Ooh. And he drove his grandfather home. And then he said he hugged him. Like they went out for Greek food and he dropped them off and then hugged him and said goodbye. And that was the last time he saw him. On May 2nd, 2022... So basically a month ago, Nathan was indicted by a Vermont grand jury. He lives in Vermont now, with charges related to his mother's death and multiple counts of fraud that are related to his grandfather's death. So they're not directly charging him with the murder, but right. saying that all of this is part of a larger plan to get inheritance. The indictment details what is believed to have occurred. So Nathan, this is what the indictment says. It was released publicly, I think, a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So Nathan planned to kill his mother and strategized how he would report her disappearance as an accident. The Connecticut Insider, which I'm going to link all our sources, but Connecticut Insider was a big one, Boston Herald and Boston Globe. The Connecticut Insider had a breakdown of all of the charges. So while not formally charging him with the 2013 death of his grandfather, the indictment said that Nathan did kill the man along with his mother as part of a decade-long scheme to obtain his money from his grandfather's trust.
That's insane.
Now, the indictment stated that Nathan shot his grandfather twice while he slept that night, and then removed his truck GPS the night of the murder. Conveniently, his truck had a GPS. There's no history on the GPS of that night. Yeah. And he also wiped a hard drive like the same night. So there's no evidence of where he was or what he was searching, etc. The indictment also alleges that he lied about where he was that night. But what's even more bizarre to me is that Nathan lied about purchasing the gun, which is very verifiable. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, I don't have the gun. Like, I don't have that gun. What are you talking about? But you can go check with the person who sold it to you. So why did he kill his mother so soon after? Well, the presumed motivation is that he was running low on funds. So when his grandfather died, Nathan received over $500 million. It was like $550.
And he was running low on funds?
Sorry, $500,000. Sorry. $500,000. And he actually received, I believe it was $550,000 and then $150,000 for like college related stuff.
Okay,
and
so
he
blew through all of it.
Like a ton
almost
of money.
$1 million.
Yeah. And he blew through it within 2 years, the majority of it. So the indictment details that he hid from authorities, including the Coast Guard, when his boat was reported missing in 2016. And if you like look at, there's not a ton of like photos of exactly when he was rescued, but he doesn't look like someone who's malnourished, dehydrated, injured at sea for eight days. Like you can't drink the ocean water. So you're going to be dehydrated. He has no food.
And it's September. It's, you know, it's the ocean chilly. In New England is not
no
that
hypothermia.
Warm.
Hypothermia. Yeah.
And in September it's getting cold again.
Exactly. So like it didn't look like he was someone who'd been lost for 8 days at sea. The years-long investigation was handled by the FBI, the U.S. Coast Guard, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, the Windsor Police Department, and the Connecticut State Police. This is what the U.S. attorney shared. In 2011, Nathan had been diagnosed with potential mood and psychotic disorders, and according to the Vermont Digger, after explosive, aggressive rages, he received these diagnoses. Obviously, mental health disorders do not cause people to commit heinous crimes, but it kind of feels like he's, like, using this, you know, the police. He also was diagnosed as on the spectrum, and he's saying, you know, they are targeting me because I am, you know, autistic, and I have trouble reading social cues, and it's like, no. there's very clear evidence.
Well, that may be true. There's some other stuff going on there.
And people who have any type of neurodivergent mental health, any issue or difference, like, that doesn't obviously cause you to commit a crime like this. So while he is awaiting trial, prosecutors have deemed him to be a flight risk because of his aggressive and explosive rage history. So his case is, like, pending currently, like, ongoing. There, the most recent update that I could find was from last week. He hasn't been formally convicted yet, he might not be formally convicted, obviously innocent until proven guilty, but I don't think this looks very good for him. And if convicted, he could spend the rest of his life in prison.
That's insane.
But it's just...
And his mother was never found.
Never found. No. And I think this story, or this case, obviously very heartbreaking that this is tragedy has affected this family twice, but it's like, as like, there's so many, not so many, but there's multiple examples of people trying to cheat insurance policies to get inheritance. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't, why is this happening in 2022? So yeah, his case is still open right now. It's pending currently. He is getting arraigned. And when we have an update, we'll definitely share it. But I kind of stumbled upon this by accident the other day and like
story.
Was reading everything.
I hadn't heard about it. Had you heard about it at all?
No. And you know, he, just the way he talks about his mom and his grandfather, it's just very disconnected. And, you know, even if like part of that is because of his autism diagnosis, that's one thing, but he just, it doesn't seem like, oh, this is someone that, you know, maybe is neurodivergent. It's like someone that's like cold-hearted. Yeah. The way that he's like talking about it, just like, it doesn't seem like apathetic. It seems
more
cold-hearted.
Psychopathic
So that's the story of Nathan Carman. And now I'm like, I've checked it multiple times because I'm very curious about what will happen.
Now we're obsessed.
Now we're obsessed. But let us know if you'd heard that, and stay tuned to future episodes of Mass Hysteria. We will give you an update, and hang with us, guys. We have some exciting projects that we've been working on that we're very excited to share.
We keep promising them, but they are coming.
They are coming. If you've like listened to more than one episode of us, you know that we are usually behind our timeline, but we do catch up. We do catch up eventually. You know, we just like to add an element of suspense.
Production takes a bit.
Production, hair and makeup with Connor.
Exactly.
Takes years.
Exactly.
Connor's like, you know what? You know, it'd be a great time to get my tonsils out. No, but until next time, bye guys.
Bye guys.